I'm Lin-Manuel Miranda, and you're listening to Hard Knock Life.
Well, it's the NOC in full color, you see me? The Hard Knock Life. Comics, movies, and TV. Yeah. Pop culture with a different perspective.
Welcome to Hard Knock Life. I'm Keith Chow.
I'm Brittany Monet.
I'm Dominic Ma.
How you guys doing?
Hi, friends.
I'm good.
So much stuff is happening. Jesus Christ.
Well, yes. It's September 11th, for one thing.
There's also
and
that.
And football season has started. It's in some ways the least nerdy day possible. It's like, this is like the most normie, non-nerdy day. And yet...
Well, not just that. The Elizabethan age just ended. There's that as well.
Elizabethan age ended.
So anyway, That's not what we care about here at the Nerds of Color. The big news that we got to cover is the other palace on this side of the Atlantic. It's the Disney Castle.
Mm-hmm.
They just hosted their annual D23 Expo. So I am not quite a Disney-phile. I don't understand what D23 means. Does anyone know the origin of that particular name?
I don't. I'm sorry. Like, I like Disney, but I'm one of those people who don't know all the little ins and outs like that.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck is D23? What does that have to do with anything Disney? I'm sure people in the comments can tell us.
What was Eminem's rap crew called?
D12?
Okay, yeah. So it's not that.
It's not that. And I'm pretty sure Marshall Mathers has nothing to do with the Mouse House.
Yeah, I have no idea, except that it is catchy and kind of SEO and... you know, probably refers to, like, Walt's favorite number or something. Or actually, when
they're fans of Michael Jordan, I think, is what, ultimately.
When my friends made a joke that it refers to the 23 companies that they own that produce all content. And it might really be up to 23 by this point.
At this point. What's also interesting is that we always talk about how the timing always works out, that Disney and Marvel, to a certain extent, always basically eat Warner Brothers and DC's lunch. It happens at Comic-Con every year. It happens when Warner Brothers announces their two iconic superheroes are going to have a movie where they fight. And then Marvel says, oh yeah, we're going to do that too and do it better. DC announces a whole multiverse in which their lead character is going to open up the multiverse of all the cinematic history of the DC heroes. And Marvel says, yeah, we're going to do that too. And then do it first and do it better.
Mm-hmm.
This week was the big Black Adam trailer announcement on the heels of Warner Brothers announcing they're canceling DC Fandom, which would have been their own version of D23, right?
Oh, no Fandom?
No Fandom this year. It's getting written off for taxes, I guess.
Oh, sure. Well, they only had one, right? It's that.
Twice. They did it twice.
Okay.
2 years in a row.
Fine.
So no Fandom, no, and it's not like they had anything to announce, right? Like, they were going to have a Fandom to announce all the shit we're canceling. That would have been great. That's what I kind of
was hoping. We're still thinking about releasing this Flash movie. That's where
so,
it's possible.
And maybe we'll talk about the Black Adam trailer, maybe not. But, like, that was the big DC thing earlier in the week. The Black Adam trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And then D23. And it's like, oh, yeah? How about this trailer and that trailer and Werewolf by Night for some reason? So
actually, that looks really dope.
I'm just saying, but like, who asked for it? Anyway, we'll get there.
I didn't, but now I want it.
And that's good.
Anyway.
I think that very much falls in line with what you say about Disney eating other people's lunch and sort of we use the word trolling too much. It's like what he's calling geopolitics. It's like a provocation to... Mm-hmm. Freaking wasn't Paramount supposed to have the monster universe?
Speaking of Paramount, like Disney just kind of like stepped all over their Star Trek day too, right?
Yeah, just kind of stepped over the Star Trek day.
And they took Matt Shankman, who was supposed to be doing Star Trek, and he's doing now Fantastic Four instead.
Is that right? See? Poaching. Yeah. Yep.
That's all they do.
And so I thought that Werewolf by Night thing, which is sort of a surprise, was kind of like saying, oh yeah, we can do a monsterverse too, no problem. Because all those monsters are in Marvel canon also.
Yes. Right.
And they're all essentially public domain.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm alone in this, but the Werewolf by Night was the most exciting trailer I saw from all of the Marvel footage. So, like I said, it's not something I asked for, but that's now the thing that I want to see the most out of everything that they're releasing. With at least those trailers, like that, to me, I was like, oh, this looks amazing. This looks cool.
Yeah, it was cool because it had a cool vibe, like old school horror movie,
kind of
a different style, and we like to latch onto stuff like that.
Well, I guess let's start with Werewolf by Night then, because again, I'm not I'm not well versed on obscure Marvel characters, particularly in the Werewolf by Night, Blade, Morbius. Like, I feel like they all kind of exist in the same milieu in the Marvel Universe. Yeah. So, Dominic, yes. I will turn to you. Who the fuck is Werewolf by Night?
I don't remember really well, but I remember that was the name of a comic when they had a mini Monsterverse part of Marvel Comics, probably in the late 70s. You know, they had their version of Frankenstein, too, and some other things. Werewolf by Night is not to be confused with Man-Wolf, who is the guy that J. Jonah Jameson's son turns into with Moon, right? Mm-hmm. Different person. And I bet Werewolf by Night like gets pulled into the Midnight Suns area of things at some point in the modern version. But I think mainly what, as far as I know, what you're saying is true. It's a public domain monster, and it has, you know, some Marvel connections that are just like, we'll make that one. And it'll be a surprise. And on Halloween.
Yeah, and I almost wonder, because of, like, it's so fanciful, right? It's like you said, it's this old school Hammer movie, kind of like Universal monster movie. Mm-hmm. It's black and white. It's like, it looks like a period piece. But it's also Marvel Studios production. It's not one of those, like, you know, side projects. Mm-hmm. It's fully entrenched in the MCU. So I wonder if it's like kind of like a movie within a movie kind of thing. Like maybe the Werewolf by Night special presentation, right? They're not even calling it a movie or a show. Mm-hmm. It's a special presentation. Maybe it's a movie that exists in the MCU that like will play in the background in a future movie, but they're just releasing it as a movie. You know what I'm saying? It's almost as if they released Rogers the Musical as an actual musical, right? Like the kind of like world within a world. I don't know. I mean, because on the surface, it doesn't look like it would fit anywhere within what we know of the Marvel Universe.
I think that's what I like about it, maybe, that it looks the most different and creative, something that they've done in I don't know how long. It just really stood out to me, and I think it, like you said, it picks up on the old, like, you know, scary movies and stuff, so it's just, I don't know, it's vibing with me. I'm really, like, I'm just, I'm down for that. Like, I didn't think that was gonna be the most exciting project. I thought we would get some Daredevil footage or, I don't know, something else that would, like...
They haven't even started shooting, apparently. That was the big news out of D23.
Or the Marvels. Like, I thought we would get the Marvels footage. I've heard the people in the room said that was actually the best footage that they saw in there. That was the best thing. But, like, for me, I didn't think that, you know, Wolf by Night was going to be something that I'm like, yeah, actually, this is really what I want to see. Who cares about the other stuff? Like, that's how I feel.
That's kind of what I was saying, is like they've never... Did they ever announce that they were doing something like Werewolf by Night, right? Because, like, when they were plotting out phases 5, 4, and 5, and 6, there was never like, and Werewolf by Night, right? It was just kind of like came out of nowhere, which is kind of cool too, right? Mm-hmm. It was showing that Marvel can still surprise.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're so used to, like, it's cool. It's cool that there's something that wasn't announced 6 months ago that we can talk about for 6 months. This one is like, okay, it's just going to come out. We can talk about it for...
Right,
like,
it's coming out next month, right, you know?
Yeah. I agree with your meta movie theory. It makes sense. Maybe it's just something that, like, Ant-Man and his daughter are watching in the theater on Halloween night or something.
I hope not.
you want it to be like real?
Yes. Real. It looks so cool. I don't know.
Like Mahershala Ali shows up at the very end and like kills Gael Grasso Bernal.
I'm fine with that. I don't know. As long as it's done well. It just looks like the most like cool, like I said, the most cool different thing they've done in a good minute. So it just looks really fun, and I'm on board. So.
Well, let's take a step back, because Werewolf by Night was not the only thing that was announced during D23. It wasn't the only footage that was released on the internet, to Brittany's point. Some things were held close to the vest. Some things were still behind closed doors, only for the people in the room. Other things were released on YouTube minutes after it was announced on stage. It's very much like the Comic-Con vibe. Friday and Saturday, the first 2 days of D23 were wide open. They live streamed like the video game presentation. They live streamed the animation presentations. But they held the Star Wars and Marvel ones. Mm-hmm. Privately. Mm-hmm. Just looking back at the weekend, what, other than Werewolf by Night, because we've just talked about it, what was the thing that stood out the most across all of the presentations? This includes not just Marvel, but the Lucasfilm presentations and the live action Disney presentations and the animation and Pixar presentations.
So I never saw the movie, but Willow, the series, that looks really fun. And I think that's also like the next thing I'm most excited about. And then everything that was, like, strictly Star Wars that I saw, I was like, yes. Mm-hmm. So, I'm very much on board.
Tales of the Jedi and Mandalorian were the only trailers we... Oh, I guess we got a new Andor trailer.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm just on board with Star Wars, basically. I think everything Lucasfilm pretty much released that I saw, I'm on board with it. Yeah, I don't know. Secret Invasion looks fun, and I don't remember what other trailer they released for Marvel, unless that was the only trailer besides...
Marvel was Secret Invasion, Werewolf by Night, and I feel like there was one other.
If there was one other, it just didn't hit for me.
Maybe there wasn't any other footage from Marvel.
Well, I mean, there were things that were shown in the room. And
right, I mean, that was released to the plebeians like us.
Yeah, showed up on YouTube, I think.
We were not in the room where it happens.
We were not in the room where it happens.
Yes.
Lin-Manuel Miranda was in the room. He wasn't in the room where it happens either, was he?
Anthony Ramos was.
Anthony Ramos showed up. He was confirmed for Ironheart. So, listeners, we're just going to go all over the place.
There's kind of a free-form discussion or a bunch of trailers that came out.
Well, I was going to go out of Marvel and go to the live-action Little Mermaid because that was a trailer released.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Lin is doing the music with Alan Menken for that.
Lin-Manuel Miranda is working on...
With Alan Menken on Little Mermaid.
Yeah, because they're doing a couple original songs. Well, that superstar. He's trying to get his EGOT.
Davey Diggs, I think, is Sebastian? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
A little Hamilton reunion for Little Mermaid.
But yeah, wait, let's talk about this one because this is just a rich topic. What the first teaser for the live action Little Mermaid came out. Y'all have thoughts?
I'm not a huge fan of the original. I knew Britney was going to be mad. Of course it's a classic. I love the songs, right? Poor Unfortunate Souls, Part of Your World. I love the music. I'm not a fan of the film itself. I don't love the movie. I mean, I think it partly is just the story just kind of, I feel for Ursula. She signed a bad contract. It's Ariel's fault. It's not
Ursula didn't have to die. You have a point, but I still love that movie. I don't know.
And then, the whole thing about, what's his name? Eric, he needs a girl can't speak for herself. I mean, that's a shady prince is all I'm saying.
Look, the original story is actually, the original Little Mermaid book is actually really fucked up and kind of sad,
but in general fairy tales are
it's a lot worse than
the Disney.
Yeah, Ariel does not get the Little Mermaid in that version does not get her prince, and she ends up dying and turning into sea foam. So I don't know how family happy whatever that would be, but I know Hans Christian apparently was in love with the ballet dancer, and she gave up a ballet for some other dude that she ended up with, and she wasn't really happy with the rest of her life. And he wrote that story in dedication to her that she lost herself trying to please this dude or whatever.
I will say, I'm not super stoked that Melissa McCarthy is Ursula. That's kind of the one casting in that movie that I'm not.
I feel like it's the obvious casting choice for when you hear most people say, oh, what about Melissa McCarthy? Because I think the problem is, when you only have two or three well-known, overweight actors, and you have an overweight villain, they're going to only say the only two or three actors that they know.
Why? You think it's too much of a gimmick, Keith? Or do you not care for Melissa McCarthy?
When I said I'm not a huge fan of the original movie, it doesn't mean, I don't have any reverence for, the characters. Like I said, Ursula is an iconic character. Mm-hmm. And I think she's also an iconic, especially in, the queer community, so I think there was some... having an actress like Melissa McCarthy, to your point, they just found some plus size actress, but they could have gone someone a little bit more flamboyant, because Melissa McCarthy is a very specific kind of comedy that's not my cup of tea necessarily. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yes, and I know that Ursula was designed after Divine.
Divine. Yeah. So the only other thing I'll say about Little Mermaid is that we only got a tease for the footage that was released publicly, but apparently, for the folks in the room, they actually got the whole Part of Your World sequence.
Oh.
So that's, I want to see, I wish I saw that, because the little taste we got was really interesting.
I can't believe that. That's the selling point of the whole movie.
Well, that's why they only gave it to the 1,000 people in the room instead of the millions of people watching on YouTube, so.
I have loved Black Twitter's What Are We Wearing to the Little Mermaid tweets. Those have been really fun. If you haven't seen them, I'd highly recommend looking those up. Yeah, like that people posted really ridiculous Party City version costumes of the Little Mermaid or King Triton, and it's just really funny. So I would highly recommend finding those tweets.
Okay, what are you wearing? Do you want to discuss that?
I don't know. I need to look at what Party City
you're
has
going
offered.
Though, right? You're going opening night.
Oh, I am so going opening night. It's the day after my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. Here's the Little Mermaid.
Yeah, my birthday's May 25th. It comes out May 26th. It's just... meant to be.
Are you worried about the new songs? I mean, it's one thing Lynn's doing it, but anytime you add new songs to like an iconic score like Little Mermaid.
Well, I know they did for the stage musical. They added in a couple songs that aren't in the movie just because like Eric doesn't have a song, but he does in the musical, which when they did a few years ago at the Hollywood Bowl, they did like a live, like, you know, where they have the movie playing and they have the orchestra and they have a couple of singers come out and sing different songs. They had Darren Criss sing the song from the musical.
Do you know who is the prince in this movie? Do you know?
It's not Harry Styles because he was up for the role, but he didn't get it. Thank God. Sorry, nothing. Well, nothing mean.
We don't want him spitting on Ariel. So that's...
yeah, right. But I can't remember the name of the dude.
Yeah, I don't recall who's playing.
But I know that, you know, all the Ariel sisters are all like diverse and different people are. Different women of different races are playing.
Well, but so. Speaking of giving characters songs who didn't have songs in the original, the other trailer that I was really interested in, primarily because it was a favorite in our household when it first came out, was Disenchanted.
Oh yes, that looks a lot of fun.
And it seems like, you know, in the sequel, they're actually going to give Idina Menzel a song because she didn't sing at all in the first movie. Well, no, but she was in the first movie and she has no, because she's just the bad guy. And she doesn't sing. It's just like, how do you cast Idina Menzel, like, at the height of her Wicked popularity and not give her a song? So I think they've corrected that mistake in the sequel. Because it looks like there's a number for Idina, so.
Yeah, and I just think now that she's more known because of Frozen.
You have to.
So now it's like, we messed up the last time and give her a song. So now it's like, we got to.
Well, it's kind of like in Frozen 2, because Frozen 1, they didn't give Jonathan Groff a song. He only had... like the reindeer talk to people song, which is like 30 seconds. And then Frozen 2, they were like, we've totally lost Dominic. I'm with you.
I'm with you. I don't know anything about Disenchanted, but I'm with you.
What I appreciate the most about Frozen 2 is like, well, let's give Groff a whole song. And it's the best song in the sequel. Anyway.
Oh, also, did they not, I don't know if they announced or they just talked about the sequel to Lion King?
Oh, it's a prequel, apparently. Wait, Barry Jenkins directed
live action. Oh, it's real? I thought that was a joke.
No.
Right, because it seems so good, it should be a joke. But Barry Jenkins directing a Lion King movie.
But it's the live action Lion King.
Yeah.
Or the photoreal Lion King.
Yeah. So
didn't they just already do that with Barry?
Well, no, it's called Mufasa the Lion King. So it's the origin story of Mufasa.
Right, so I think this is them, like, their first sequel to their live-action remakes. Or, anyway,
well, no.
Or, I don't know if it's
the first. Maleficent had a sequel.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think one other film
had a sequel. Yeah, that is technically one of their live-action remakes, too. I just meant it would be like if they did, like, Dumbo 2 or something. But my point is, it's very exciting that Barry Jenkins is directing it. A great visionary black filmmaker who did Moonlight and Medicine for Melancholy. And, like, he's one of those guys, like, you thought, like, would be able to stay out of this, you know, big studio, like, event movie circle for a while. But they got him, apparently, to do something, which is he's probably greatly suited for.
We'll see. It's one of the things, like, who asked for the Mufasa movie? Everyone hated The Lion King, so.
I hate it? I bet it still made $1 zillion.
Well, everything makes $1 zillion, but, like, especially recently... I guess folks who had missed it in the theaters or people are just rediscovering it. I know it kind of like went viral again recently on Twitter because people were like comparing the wildebeest scene from the live action to the wildebeest scene in the cartoon and like the expressiveness of the cartoon. And then, you know, part of me is like, well, but the whole like exercise of Jon Favreau's Lion King was it like tell the same story, but with like real animals and you're not going to get the same expressiveness from like a real lion cub than you would. And I guess, but that begs the question, like, then why even do it? But I mean, it is interesting that yes, Barry Jenkins of all people is doing Mufasa. So I'm curious to see like how he brings his sensibility to that movie. But it's also apparently going to feature Timon and Pumbaa again, like Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner's versions.
Okay.
So, I mean, they're kind of doing the, remember, like, this is, I think, especially for, like, Britney's generation, Lion King 1.5.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was, like, retelling the first story, but then through the eyes of Timon and Pumbaa. They're kind of, like, doing that in a way, because that's what I heard from the reporting inside the room, is that it's going to be, like, Mufasa's origin story, but it's also going to be, like, Timon and Pumbaa. So.
Okay.
Who knows?
Who knows? I mean, Hocus Pocus 2 looks fun.
There's also Hocus Pocus 2.
Another long-awaited sequel.
Sequel 30 years after the original.
Finally.
I mean, Hocus Top Pocus. Gun Maverick proved that you can wait 30 years and make a dope-ass sequel, so.
Yes, which I never saw the first one. Not gonna
But you
lie.
Saw Maverick?
Yes. I don't like Tom Cruise, but my family forced me to go with them to go see that.
Did you like it?
I did. I don't like Tom Cruise, but...
Like, I don't consider myself a Tom Cruise fan either, but then, like, I was watching Maverick and just, like, pumping my fists every scene,
but
so, like...
they are bringing back my favorite Tom Cruise character for a movie. They are doing a Les Grossman movie of his character from Tropic Thunder. That is my most favorite...
They're just bringing him back, the yes. agent.
That is my most favorite Tom Cruise character. That is, like, when I love him the most, so I'm very excited
yeah.
for that.
Many
like,
would agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, and not to go on this Tom Cruise tangent when we're trying to talk about D23, but did you see the footage that Paramount released of the Mission Impossible intro that he did for CinemaCon a couple months ago?
Mm-mm.
So basically, there's like a biplane flying over the mountains of South Africa. It's like one of those like old school like yeah. Red Baron planes. Mm-hmm. And my man is just standing on top of it.
It's crazy.
And then like Chris McQuarrie, the director, flies next to him. He's like, Tom, we're losing the light. We need to go. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, I gotta go, guys. And then the plane dives with him standing on top of it.
Because he's crazy. I'm
65
sorry.
Years old and you're gonna die.
Wish.
And people say that no one does practical effects anymore.
Here's what I want. I want a Tom Cruise Jackie Chan movie. I want the two of them doing a movie together.
Like going, are they like enemies?
Until, I don't know, but just one of them breaks something on set. Mm. Anyway, that's the Tom Cruise tangent. Let's get back to D23. I know, Dominic, you were covering the video game portion of D23. Was there anything interesting coming out of that side of the Disney house?
Well, I was kind of going to do that for nerd popping, but...
Oh,
sorry. It's sort of, because you guys went off of musicals. I could go off on video games for a while, but I think you may or may not be interested. Okay, I'll tease it. There was a bunch of stuff, and the biggest reveal was that they announced a Black Panther and Captain America team-up game set in World War II.
Oh.
There was a lot of rumors about what this would be. It has, you know, very esteemed talent involved.
Who's voicing?
They announced nothing. We know nothing about it. It doesn't even have a title. Oh. We have no idea what's going on. The main thing is that it has these, very esteemed, video game creator talent working on it. So they know it's going to be like a big AAA console game. And people thought it would be like X-Men or Fantastic Four or something. But instead, it's this period piece that just boils down on these two Avengers.
That sounds cool.
And that's all I'm going to say about that for right now. Maybe we'll
revisit. Yeah, we'll tease that for later. So stay tuned to the end of the podcast to hear more about the Captain America Black Panther game. Well, but there were other announcements. Were they like paled in comparison to that one?
They announced freaking two Avatar games. I don't know. Like, it was like I was expecting them to preview something about the upcoming Spider-Man games or the Wolverine games, which are a big deal. But they didn't, because those are probably more in the Sony house.
Mm.
So they're waiting to do that. And yeah, sorry, no shade to Midnight Suns people, but
oh yeah, that was announced.
There is
too,
this
right?
Midnight Suns game coming out, but I would say buzz around it is not very buzzy, except I'm not into turn-based combat myself, but maybe its main draw is that you can play as some interesting characters like Nico Minoru or Magic. I think that's cool.
Mm-hmm. And is that trying to like capitalize on the Marvel's kind of centering the Midnight Suns characters like Blade, like
yeah,
potentially a Ghost
Blade
Rider?
And it's got Ghost Rider. Yeah, it's in the Magic Darkness area of things.
Blaze,
and
or...
I don't really know which Ghost Rider it is. It might be... public information, or it might not. Again, I just know a little bit about that Midnight Suns game.
We need Robbie Reyes. Ghost
yes,
Rider
we do.
In the MCU, bring him back.
Who we? Well, we got Donnie Blaze, but
We'll get to that. We'll definitely get to that.
Wait. So what else? There are a bunch of announcements.
So there's Secret Invasion.
Yeah.
The trailer looks great.
The trailer looks good. You know, I was thinking, what would that show be about? And it does seem like the Skrulls are not as friendly as we've been led to believe.
A faction of them. That's what people have to remember. It's a faction
of them. But even Talos doesn't seem so trustworthy in the trailer.
No, because that person he's beating up is a bad guy.
Oh, is that right?
I'm pretty sure. Malcolm X. That's who he played. I don't remember his actual real name.
Like, wait, Talos is beating up Malcolm X? That doesn't sound like a good
That's just your shorthand for the actor, and you're saying,
that's my shorthand for Malcolm X from One Night in Miami, a big deal. Right?
Yes, yes, yes. The guy who played Malcolm X One Night in Miami, until I know his actual name, he's just always going to be Malcolm X. I'm pretty sure he's a Skrull, and Talos or Ben Middleton was beating him up in the trailer. So I think he's a Skrull, and he's bad.
So I was a big fan of that Secret Invasion comic book series. It's one of my favorite stories. I'm not, like, hugely into Bendis either, but I think that's his best work. Mm. And, you know, part of the tradition of the Marvel secret events, Secret Wars, Secret Invasion, Secret Empire et al. So it's interesting. So it looks like this one is focusing on Nick Fury and some amount of Rhodey. In a kind of undercover spy drama, right?
It seems more like a spy thriller type of thing, so they must be infiltrating something that has replaced S.H.I.E.L.D. or something like that is what I'm getting. Yeah. And I remember that the girl who played Gemma on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was seen around set.
Oh, do you think she'll show up?
So she could be showing up, but I just also found out today that she is a director now, so she could have just been there because she was directing an episode and not in it. So. Yeah. Like, but she was around, you know, and obviously there's still rumors that we're going to see Daisy Johnson return, especially it feels even more heightened because obviously her and Simu took a picture together. So there's just like a lot of like, was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. involved and not?
Well, and that, the one thing that I took away from that trailer is that it seems like, and this was rumored for a while now, that the Nick Fury that we're seeing in Secret Invasion is the real Nick Fury, number one, because as you remember in Spider-Man, he was a Skrull. He was Ben Mendelsohn, right?
Yes, it was Talos. Ultimately. Yes.
But the other thing that it implies, at least, that Maria Hill implies, and I think the trailer itself implies, is that the real Nick Fury, the Nick Fury we met in Iron Man, has been away for much longer than we were led to believe. That it wasn't just far from home where he was replaced by a Skrull. That he might have been on this secret mission in space for years. Yeah. Probably, and so like since Ultron, I think that's the timing perhaps. So like all of the appearances that Nick Fury's had in the previous years has not been Nick Fury. It's been the Talos version.
Except for what do you call it? Captain Marvel.
Right. Well, Captain Marvel, which is sets up the relationship with the Skrull. So like, that's interesting to me to kind of find out like, how long has Nick Fury been away? And it would maybe explain why Nick Fury wasn't involved in the Endgame battle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the cool conceit of Secret Invasion, the story.
Wait, he also got dusted, non-comics though.
Readers, they were bored. Whoa. Okay, damn it. The dusting.
But I guess they're trying to say that, but that was the Talos version of Nick Fury.
So then Talos had his pager?
So
then Talos had the pager to call Captain Marvel.
Well, because it seemed like Talos and Fury had an alliance. Like, it wasn't like Talos was just being Fury without Fury's knowledge. Maybe Fury's like, I gotta go on this space mission. Mm-hmm. You need to be me on Earth, so here's everything you need to know about me. Mm. Who knows? I mean, like I said, I could be completely wrong, because I totally misinterpreted Talos in the trailer, because I was like, ooh, is Talos a bad guy, actually? But to your point, he's beating up a bad guy, so.
Well, no, also, Skrulls can imitate other Skrulls, okay? I mean, I think this is going to be the big, you know, gimmick of the series is probably people imitating each other out the wazoo. And again, the background is that there have been deep cover Skrull agents imitating people for years or months or ever very long, and you have to, like, do the track back to figure out when they first got replaced. And then also there's this thing of, with, you know, not every Skrull has the same like life view, like there's one faction that in the comics it becomes like sort of hyper religious and they fanatically attack Earth, but there's still some other Skrulls who, like the ones you met in Captain Marvel, who might be coming from a different place.
So the good Skrulls is not a conceit of the MCU solely. Like, that, there's precedent for that in the comics.
That I don't remember, but it seems likely. But it's not very much in Secret Invasion, the comic. In Secret Invasion, they're pretty much monolithically
bad.
Bad.
Because the whole conceit of that comic is that, like, all of these heroes you thought were heroes were secretly bad guys all along.
Right. Uh-huh. But they're always, I mean, there are always a few news. There's something like, what is it? Well, it's like the schools are going through a phase because they've become fanatical about their leader, Queen, in this religious way, sort of like the Silence of Battlestar Galactica. But then there's other things like Hulkling's like half Skrull, and, you know, he represents another faction. Anyway, don't want to get too lost in the weeds. But the point is, you can't trust anyone.
Yeah.
And that's the point of Secret Invasion.
Well, I mean, so yeah, and that was the only real footage that we got for the, again, no shade to Werewolf by Night, but like the stuff that we've known about going into phase 5 and 6. But there were some things that weren't footage that we got. We got the final lineup for the Thunderbolts. Has nothing to do with Emil Blonsky, so I'm like doubly wrong.
Or they just haven't, or they haven't said who that villain is that they're fighting.
And you think that maybe they're going to take down the Abomination goes savage at the end of She-Hulk, maybe. And they got to go get him.
I just feel like that lineup is like a little too white, first of all. And
they're where's Zemo? Like, how do you do a Thunderbolts movie and no Zemo?
He's the villain too. Maybe I don't know.
But isn't Zemo but Zemo's iconically like the leader of the Thunderbolts, right? Like,
yeah, I think they stopped caring about that completely because unless they're switching stuff up. Reads the Thunderbolts.
Yeah,
okay, let's be serious.
But I just feel like they have like 6 characters who all do the same thing, and then there's Ghost who has a different cool useful power.
Yeah. But like, yeah, I mean, they really why do the is same Bucky thing. In the Thunderbolts?
Do we
like,
need
why?
Winter Soldier in there?
Yeah.
I mean, not Winter Soldier. Do we need USA Agent? No.
Oh,
not
right.
Really.
Like, so you got Bucky, US Agent, and Yelena. Like,
and
I
Red
love
Guardian.
Florence Pugh. And Red Guardian. Like, you have 2 Captain America types. 3.
All of them.
Bucky's a Captain America type.
Are like the same type of character in a way in terms of what they do. And then you have Ghost who actually has different cool powers. So I just feel like.
It is
and
weird.
Then
it's
she's
a weird
the only
lineup.
One who's not white. So I'm just like. What is this lineup?
It is a weird lineup.
But, I mean, I think you did predict correctly where, like, there would be, like, the villains from previous movies who have already been introduced.
I mean, it wasn't even my prediction, because you had Val recruiting actively U.S. agent.
Well, I did say it would be U.S. agent, Ghost, and Yelena probably showing up, but...
And Ghost is cool, because she was definitely underserved in that movie, and she's a really interesting character.
She is, I agree. I just feel like they could have maybe thrown in some more people of color. I don't know.
I don't know. I was less excited after I saw the actual lineup.
Yeah, because, I mean, my understanding of it is that the concept of Thunderbolts is to match Suicide Squad, right? Or to be the you know, provoke DC World by doing this, you know, as they do, doing a sort of mirror image. And, like, the concept being a bunch of military style heroes that basically run around and shoot people, and it'll probably be kind of funny and satiric. And I'm just saying they're more concerned with matching Suicide Squad energy than anything that had to do with the Thunderbolts comic. Because again, no one cares about the Thunderbolts,
right?
Really.
Yeah, but you don't have to care. But that's the thing with the MCU. You like half the characters that they've turned into lunchbox, you know, types. Have been characters no one typically cares about, and I just thought, if you're not going to, I didn't even think of it in that, but that might have been what was not sitting right with me. But like the fact that, because when I saw Bucky, I was like, Bucky, why is Bucky in the Thunderbolt? And then, but I didn't even put 2 and 2 together. Like Bucky, U.S. Agent, Red Guardian, and Yelena to a certain extent are all the same character, like they're the same type of hero, or you know, like,
yeah, they're gonna be like set, the gun task force, okay? Like,
yeah,
they're not
Ghost
gonna be Moonstone.
Who can just go in and out and stuff. Like, I don't know, they could have brought in a couple of different other powered people who have different. I don't know.
I mean, Taskmaster is probably the closest to an enhanced character other than Ghost, but even she's not like. And it's like half Russian too, right?
Yeah.
Well, that I was happy to see because I actually like those characters from Black Widow a lot. And it was nice to revisit them.
It's way more of a Black Widow sequel than I thought it was going to be.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I like that. I like Florence Pugh, and I obviously love David Harbour, but I don't know. This team is not the only person that I'm really like excited to see again is Ghost. And not that I'm not excited to see Florence Pugh again, but I don't know. I just feel like the lineup is just meh.
Yeah, it's weird. It's definitely weird.
I'm sure there'll be some other obscure.
And I might be the only person who's like excited to see Ghost, probably too. That's probably the sad part. So everyone else is like, yay, everyone
Ghost
else.
Is really cool. We could talk for hours about how Ghost is like a standout of what I consider an otherwise meh Ant-Man movie. I mean, she totally deserves more story.
We're going to take a break, and on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about She-Hulk. But before we do, the last thing I wanted to touch on from D23 is that the other announcement that piqued my interest is that the villain in Captain America 4 is going to be the leader, and they're bringing back Tim Blake Nelson from The Incredible Hulk. So, like, after She-Hulk,
which
and now...
Which you can watch on HBO Max.
Yeah, Captain America. Like, they really are, like, embracing that Edward Norton movie, and I just think that's crazy.
Yeah. Now, wait. I mean, can you folks remind me? I don't remember that leader bit at all. Was it in, like, the side material or, like...
No, he was, like, the scenes? Guy... Like,
I totally don't remember.
You need to go log on to HBO Max and watch Incredible Hulk.
HBO
because
Max,
he's, like, the guy...
Center of the Marvel Universe. Sorry, go ahead.
He's the guy Bruce goes to for help. And at the very... Because he's the one who coins Tim Roth's character, Emil Blonsky, as an abomination. Because Blonsky comes to him, he's like, if you do this, you'll be an abomination. And at some, I don't really remember the movie either, but I know at the end of the movie, he gets like knocked over and some of the Hulk juice like pours on his head, and then his head starts like growing exponentially, and he like looks all like weird. And then and people are like, ooh, the leader is coming, and then like they forgot about him for 20 years.
Yeah,
so they're actually bringing him back. So
I just don't want to watch that movie again because Edward Norton's voice gets on my nerves.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure they
do. I have such petty reasons for why I don't like people.
It's all good. I bet there's somehow there's some way that they can superimpose Mark Ruffalo into The Incredible Hulk and then put that on Disney Plus.
I think I don't know why. I don't mind Edward Norton's voice in like Fight Club, but for some reason when he's playing Bruce Banner, it gets on my nerves.
Well, let's talk about Bruce Banner's cousin after the break.
Okay.
Guess what? Goalie Nutrition is sponsoring Hard Knock Life, and you can go to goalie.com to buy apple cider vinegar gummies, their ashwagandha gummies, super fruit gummies, and super greens gummies, and get 10% off plus free shipping if you use the code HARDKNOCK at goalie.com. This is honestly, I've been taking the Goalie gummies now for a couple weeks, and I have to say, they're tasty, and they're good for you. Have you guys been enjoying the Goalie gummies?
I really like them. They're yummy, but it's a nice to add to my like routine of already like I normally take just straight vitamin C, so it's nice to have like extra supplements.
For a long time, people have praised the benefits of apple cider vinegar, and you know, as someone who's had to like drink straight apple cider vinegar sometimes when I'm not feeling well, or you know, I have some joint pain, and your mom is like, "Drink some apple cider vinegar." It's not the most appetizing home remedy, let's just say.
No, right. It tastes horrible.
So, like the apple cider part is like, ooh, does it taste like apple cider? And it's like, no, it tastes like vinegar. But ACV is very good for you. And the fact that Goalie has been able to put the ACV into these tasty little gummies made with pectin and fruit peels, which make them vegan, which is cool. So if you're vegan, you can still rock these gummies, because everyone knows gummies are usually made out of like gelatin and nasty shit. These are made out of complete non-GMO, gelatin-free, gluten-free, vegan ingredients, and you can get the benefits, all of the benefits of apple cider vinegar taking these tasty, delicious, convenient gummies. So go to goalie.com and use the code HARDKNOCK, that's HARDNOC, just like the podcast you're listening to. Get 10% off your purchase of Goalie products and free shipping.
It's a much better delivery device for that apple cider vinegar.
Yeah.
These Goalie gummies are great. You get it, and it's a delicious little candy. And I've been enjoying the super fruits one. I did feel kind of refreshed after taking a few of those.
Yeah, no, but I'm loving them so far, and they're definitely tasty. If you just want tasty gummies, at least just eat them for the yummiest.
Yeah. So go to goalie.com, use the code HARDKNOCK, HARDNOC, get 10% off your purchase and free shipping at goalie.com with the code HARDKNOCK. Hard Knock Life is being sponsored by Athletic Greens. I want to talk to you about Athletic Greens. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. Basically all the things. One of the best things about Athletic Greens is that it's lifestyle friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free. It also contains less than 1 gram of sugar and no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, and it still tastes good. Athletic Greens uses the best of the best products based on the latest science with constant product iterations and third-party testing. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day, that's it. No need for a million different pills or supplements to look out for your health. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is partnering with Hard Knock Media to give you a free 1 year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/emerging. That's athleticgreens.com/emerging to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Episode 4, I believe, of She-Hulk. Are we 4 episodes into that show already? Well, we got to talk about Madison and Wongers. That's got to be the next Disney Plus streaming show, right? Where they just sit on a couch and watch Sopranos. That's all the show should be.
My new, I don't know. I'm shipping it.
You got to come up with a portmanteau for
their
names.
Her chaos and then him wanting to try to chill and just, you know, when you have to face a problem, you have to face it. But other than that, let's be chill. They're so, I don't know. I love it. It's great.
The only thing that I couldn't get over, honestly, and this might be a case of all white people look the same, is that she looks so much like Elizabeth Olsen to me. again, maybe it was the resolution on my screen. I just couldn't get over the fact that
like Elizabeth Olsen.
But... is this Wong and Wanda? So.
Oh man, Wongers. You just made it weird. And no, it's not. Unless they're all Skrulls. But. But yeah, no, I'm glad you used the word ship, because when I was thinking about this Wong and Madison subplot, you know, in another kind of show, Madison just hooks up with the guy instantly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If he's, say, a studly white magician. Musician? Studly white magician.
Or musician.
Sorcerer. They're there's some version of the show where Madison, who just seems sort of a fun-loving, ditzy sort of type, they hook up instantly. But they don't. I mean, I'm not saying that's because he's a Chinese guy, but that's something that didn't happen, and they become very platonic.
How do you
very
know
quickly.
It didn't happen?
That's something that didn't obviously happen, so that's why I'm saying I'm glad, sort of,
that I think
more
them.
Will be developed, revealed in the future.
I ship them. And I am on the Wongason.
I gotta work on that.
We gotta work on it. But
it's two Y's, two N's and a Y, but it's not where you. It's two N's and a Wong, but it's not where you think.
It is. I don't know. I ship it. I'm down. I like them. I didn't think that I would someone had told me this was gonna happen. I would be like, I don't know about this, but I actually really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
I mean, I kind of knew it was gonna happen because when Laura interviewed all of the creators of She-Hulk a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
All they talked about was Madison. And I was like, who the hell is Madison? And why do you keep talking about it?
Yeah, Madison.
But now
great.
That the episode, it's like, oh, I get why they keep talking about Madison.
Yeah, I loved the chaos. And I, in general, She-Hulk is picking up for me again. The only thing, my overall criticism is that her CGI on She-Hulk is what kind of holds the whole show back. But I liked the last two episodes a lot. They were a lot of fun. And I think that it feels more like the Sensational She-Hulk and Dan Slott run and all that stuff of, it feels more like that. So, it's fun. It's exciting. Donnie Blaze was an idiot, but I loved that, too. And yeah, I don't know. And I really like Josh Aguirre on episode, was that the last episode?
Yeah,
episode 3?
Right. I couldn't remember his name. I just said he was the bad guy from Arrow.
Yeah, because I liked him on Arrow, and I thought he was super hot. So, he's great again.
And he's completely playing a different character.
Oh, I know,
in
different.
Arrow, he's, so menacing, and here he's kind of like a puppy dog.
I know. It's so, I don't know. I
like
that.
Literally, because his name is Pug. He's literally a puppy dog.
It's great. I don't know. I'm excited. And I'm excited for Charlie Cox next week.
Oh, so let's talk about, I don't know if that's next week's episode, because it was the they release a trailer that said, the second half of She-Hulk, and it shows a lot more Daredevil scenes than they'd given us before, because there's actually a Matt Murdock scene where he's talking to Jen and not She-Hulk. So, and it's clearly showing he's in the yellow costume, which is really cool.
Well, and he says, She-Hulk is for when the lawyering doesn't work.
Right.
I was like, ooh.
clearly She-Hulk and Daredevil are going to hook up too. Seems to be what they're telegraphing.
Oh yeah, it has to.
Because they're the two hooking upiest superheroes in the Marvel universe. Like, yeah, there's the no one stars that they don't hook up with in the biggest universe. Lips. Yeah, totally.
Wolverine once called Daredevil a big himbo.
It stands to
reason. Out of jealousy or envy, as it were.
So, yeah, not sure it's next week's, but it's definitely coming. There's 4 more episodes left, and there's going to be some Daredevil action. Or 2 more episodes left?
I think there's 4. Because I thought
it was 8. Is it 6? Is it just 6? Maybe it's 6. No, you're right. Order?
Well, maybe it is 6. Also shorter, because half.
No, better. I think Brittany's right. I just assumed 4 more because they said we're at the halfway point and it's been 4 episodes.
to be 4 more then if it's the halfway point.
You would think, but who knows?
I think it is right, but let's not get hung up on the elementary math.
yeah, exactly.
I kind of liked this episode, but also and I like seeing a lot of Wong, and we just talked about how much we enjoyed Madison. I did kind of bother because I think in a bunch of these Disney shows, they get a few episodes in and then they just want to introduce a whole bunch of side characters and new characters and stuff. Mm-hmm. There is something they're kind of straying from the formula of stay with the lead and stay with the title characters so we become involved in their story.
It's kind of like the Red Daggers in Ms. Marvel, right? All of a sudden, we're getting to the Red Daggers.
Show
and you
is
feel
going
like
great.
That should be season 2 at least.
And then there's all this new shit, all these new characters that you got to process, and there's for some reason I know that's feeling to me squandered potential, almost something weird in the Bible of how they write these Marvel series. We have to have X number of guest stars by this point. I mean, it happens in this case that Madison's a particularly funny one, and we do spending time with Wong.
Yeah, I also think they're not. I feel like they're not really setting up Titania. They bring her up again in this episode, but it's that first episode where she just shows up for 5 seconds and Jen punches her, I didn't feel was that big a deal for her to be it seems like she's supposed to be the big bad, I guess. Because Titania is an iconic She-Hulk villain, but I don't know, and you cast Jamila Jamil and so far she's been in 30 seconds of screen time. Maybe she's in all of the last couple episodes, but I don't know, I just feel the She-Hulk Titania stuff seems a little underbaked. And I don't know what they're trying to do with that. I mean, I want to circle back to the Madison Wong thing, Donna, because I feel like what you're saying is really interesting. So to you, it was a very chaste relationship.
Yeah, maybe I'm projecting a bunch of things. I know I'm projecting a bunch of things. Maybe the chaste part is just show in the first.
I just I am someone who ships things that are when one person is very chaotic and kind of a mess and all over the place, and then the other person's more stoic and calm, and that's my cup of tea. I may be the only person who's shipping it, but I'm shipping it hardcore.
Oh no, I think quite a few.
Everyone in the right mind should be shipping it. That's what I'm saying. So to your point, because they know about shipping culture, they probably know that they should not just start off with a bang, but let people enjoy the arc towards whatever kind of thing. Yes. That makes sense.
I mean, and the fact that they even paired, I think what you were getting at earlier is the fact that they even paired Madison with Wong is a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Because classically, in any kind of superhero media, even the way the MCU has handled Wong since his introduction in Doctor Strange, Wong, who was traditionally a very racist sidekick character in the past, they've actually made Wong into a well-rounded three-dimensional superhero character in the MCU, which is something that I never predicted would happen.
Yeah, he's one of the more interesting elaborations on the original comic concept.
Someone made an infographic on social media showing this is really Wong's cinematic universe, because the last 7 movies he's been the Nick Fury, in a sense, kind of holding it all together. So
And we can't.
Everyone loves.
Sorry, we can't forget that he would have, solved that whole Infinity Gauntlet problem in the first movie if fucking Doctor Strange had just learned to cut off the hand with the portal trick. But that's another story. Anyway, he's around all over, and he's like in some old school version of the Asian dude in the show. No one ships them. They've just got to be friends.
She would have been repulsed by him, not affection, even if there's no like sexual tension necessarily, there's definitely an affection for him when she sees him, right? I mean, she's also like chronically drunk, so there's some there's some like ickiness if they do hook up, because like if they hook up, like, is Wong kind of like in the right there too?
Right. And I'm not saying
like,
again,
do we want them to hook up because like she's also 90% drunk too.
Right. I'm not saying this is some big win if like the Asian guy gets to hook up with the drunk white girl. That's not like the victory end game I'm talking about. I'm just talking about it. The setup creates interesting potentials to explore the traditionally, you know, desexified Asian dude. Because the her personality is so extreme. You know, she's like a like floozy partying white girl that we've seen many times. Mm-hmm. But there's also the part of She-Hulk that is explicitly talking about dating and relationships and stuff like that. And
in this episode in particular.
Yeah, so that's why I'm hoping something comes of that on both sides.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, because even if you think about it, the one super Asian superhero movie we did get, Shang-Chi, like, talk about a chaste relationship. He and Awkwafina's were not, that was not a romantic relationship.
Yeah,
she was not his love interest. They were just friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, there's nothing wrong with being just friends, but I think to your point, even if you did cast the hot Asian guy, he seems to only be in a chaste relationship too, you know? The MCU does kind of make its POC characters desexualize.
Yeah.
I mean, not like there's so much sex happening generally.
I don't know if it's because they're afraid of the stereotype of people of color are overly sexual and not like, you know, and the like whole like white people are pure and they're not overly sexual. There's even some white girl who tweeted about like, why is She-Hulk twerking? Like, is twerking even a thing that men like? And it's just like, you know, a lot of us who like to twerk, we just do it because it's fun, not because we're trying to get someone's attention or, like, whatever. But I think that's the whole, like, thing is that, like, you know, people of color, especially women of color or men of color, whatever, they're more, like, sexual and they're trying to, like, not get hit that stereotype. But at the same time, it's like, people are human beings and if people feel sexual attraction, that's what they are. Like, not every single person of color needs to be coded as asexual so you can avoid some weird stereotype thing of over-sexualizing people. I don't know if that's what it is, but...
But I think it's also the opposite for, like, Asian male characters.
Specifically, we're talking about a stereotype that's mainly around black people, black men, and women. All women. I mean, like, if we can be... Could we really be harsh about how stereotypes work? The over-sexualization one really generally applies to black men and basically all women, and the non-sexualization one generally applies to Asian American dudes.
I mean, because even in Eternals, the Angelina Jolie, Athena and Gilgamesh, like,
yeah, that was a fascinating one. Yeah,
but then they also were not a romantic couple. Like, he cared for her, and they weren't
romantic.
I mean, they don't show them being in a romance the way that they show.
That was very sweet.
Gemma Chan and Richard Madsen. Yeah. I forget the characters'
but
name.
But still, that was unusual, and that itself was pushing a little boundary. And full notes also.
See, I read them as romantic.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Brittany, you always have your eyes open to look for these things. That's the difference.
I like romance. Like,
even if people are just like eating popcorn, you're like considering whether to ship them or not. And that's, and that's a good,
maybe just
and that's
a
good
bit.
Different perspective.
Yeah.
It's good that you see potential in everyone. That's also like.
There's definitely a rabbit hole you can go down when you try to look at like the politics of sexuality in something like the MCU. Because like typically in these superhero IP, like, the argument is also the other way. Like, people don't like any kind of romance or sexuality in a superhero.
Yeah. Unless there hardly is any.
So, right. And yeah, I mean, so and also, like, even the amount of sexuality in the MCU writ large is, like, what we're talking about, like, it's not like there's full-on, like, they made the big deal of the Icarus Cersei love scene in Eternals, mm-hmm. right? Like, first time there's a love scene in an MCU movie. And it was like, yeah, exactly. Even Captain America's, like, virginity being kind of joked about, like, it is, like, the MCU is kind of chaste as is, right? So.
Yeah, but there are a few powerful romances, like Steve Rogers and... Remind me your name.
Peggy.
And Peggy.
A
very classically centralized white pretty people romance.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's also the argument, right? Because there's definitely, like, there's Steve and Peggy, there's Tony and Pepper, there's Hawkeye and his whole family. Like, everyone else has relationships and has children and has a romantic life outside of like superhero life.
And all that is fine. That's just old fashioned.
There was T'Challa and Nakia, but
an excellent love story. But now like, not, you know, like... love suggestive love.
Yeah.
Story.
Right. That's kind
that
of
made
it.
You know that made part of that movie.
I don't know. Maybe so, Neymar, because so cool. He's sexy. So maybe Neymar's gonna get a love interest.
Did you guys see? Like, I forget which dumbass comic book artist, but like he was trying to clown.
Oh yeah.
The actor playing Namor, and he was like, "Look at my back," and like, get over yourself, dude. Anyway,
I'm sorry. I like the I don't know Neymar's body type. I don't know how to describe it, but it works for me. That's why I think Benedict Wong is also really cute. Sorry. That's why I ship him in Madison.
Yeah, he's got that thing. He's kind of, because remember, like,
and then his
Wong
voice
in comics
too.
Was kind of like, was small. It's even a physical presence thing.
Yeah.
You know, Benedict Wong is kind of like gruff and like he's, there's something cute about him.
Wong is not a sidekick in the MCU.
No,
right?
Exactly.
Like, even in the first Strange movie, like, Wong is an equal, and clearly in the last few movies, he is a superior to Stephen Strange.
But at the same time, he lays in the cut because we're focused on Doctor Strange.
You know what? I still stand with my point. I still need to finish Morbius, but I still stand with my point that Benedict Cumberbatch should have been Morbius. Yeah.
No, I mean, he already looks like Morbius without the makeup, so.
I'm glad for your optimism. That wouldn't have helped.
It's Morbin time.
My little brother thought that was a real thing, so he finished
he was
watching
waiting for the line.
Yeah, so he had finished watching the movie. I couldn't finish it because I had to get ready, and he was like, "Yeah, the movie's great," but he never said Morbin time, like serious, like dead serious. He's like, "But he never said Morbin time," so I don't get it. I was like, "You're not on Twitter. This is your problem. Why you need to be on Twitter?"
Jared Leto's he's good at that because I think in the Snyder Cut he never actually says we live in a society. It was just in the trailers. And then in the actual movie, he doesn't say we live in a society, I don't think. But anyway.
We live in a society where we're still talking about this. Oh, and just to round off that point again, Doctor Strange and this whole thing with Christine gives that romantic
flair
to the last Doctor Strange movie. Though Doctor Strange is just a freaking renegade, like, fuck up, almost Sorcerer Supreme. But we centralize his story, and that's the saying.
Yeah.
So, just something about this Wong being somewhat centered in this series, run by an Asian American woman with the potential for some kind of tangible emotional relationship. But again, with the caveat, it's with this interesting, chaotic, funny, hot mess girl. Could be great, or they could go the soft way and just never speak of it again, which would be the shame.
I don't need that.
Introduce it and it just be a gag that the Asian guy sits on the couch next to Euler. Yes, we basically you started something, you got to finish it.
Yeah, like this podcast, we started it and now we have to finish it. Brittany, what's nerd popping?
Two things, because I promised a listener that I would talk about this movie that I saw like 2 weeks ago. The Invitation, it was really great. I loved it. My only downside was it was not sexy enough. You're going to have vampires, I'm sorry, and the wedding, and it was, like, almost there, too. It was, like, there's a couple moments where I'm like, ooh, this should have happened, and this should have happened. And it could have been a little bit more bloody and sucking people's blood, but it was great. It was so fun. I heard that they might release a version where there is more sexy and gory, so I want that version. It was fun. Highly recommend watching it if you, like... Sexy vampires, because the dude playing the vampire is very sexy. His name is, I think, Thomas Duarte. Yeah, it was great. And then my other thing is I watched The Making of Kenobi, A Jedi's Return. It was wonderful. I loved the whole process and Deborah Chow talking about why she made the certain, like, character choices she made. She's so, like, her in Star Wars. Ugh. Oh, I was so happy. It was so great. And then just seeing, like, everyone talk about who returned, like, you know, Hayden and Ewan just talking about coming back and how, like, it wasn't even they had, what's his name in it? Qui-Gon, talking about him coming back. And I don't know, it was great. And I loved seeing Hayden just, like, embrace that, like, I am, like, Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader. And that even when Darth Vader, quote-unquote, Anakin is evil, he's still the chosen one. Like, when he said that, I was like, oh. But it was great.
One thing I love about Disney Plus is that they do have these behind the scenes, you know, like... I always complain about the death of physical media and Blu-rays not having as many special features as they used to. And one of the cool things, I mean, yes, it's a streaming service, but it's cool that they do kind of embrace the idea of having all these, like, behind-the-scenes documentaries for all the properties that they do, because there's also the Avengers ones that they do. There's one they just released for Thor, but then of course there's this one for Kenobi. I know, but they do one for every Marvel thing that comes out. Yeah. And then when the show's over or the movie's over, they release the, I think it's called Avengers Assembled. Mm-hmm. And then, and now they're doing that for the Star Wars stuff.
Cause, well, they have
they,
been because
they did that for Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. It was called like Disney Gallery or something. Yes. Before, but now they just decided, well, we'll just put it all in one thing for each successive show. So yeah, that's, I haven't watched it yet, but it's definitely in my queue.
I would definitely watch it because they also have footage of Alec Guinness, and yeah, I don't know, it was really nice, and I liked it. I did, the only thing is I wish they had Vivian talk a little bit more, who is, you know, Princess Leia. That was my only like downside, where she wasn't in it enough, but it was really fun. I liked it, and they really need to give Hayden his own like Darth Vader series.
I mean, then maybe
I'm just on board. I'm gunning for it. I have been on the Hayden train since I was 12, and it is, I'm never getting off of it, and I'm gonna support him forever. So he's not just hot.
Dominic, what's nerd popping?
A bunch of things, but first I just gotta say, how is Edward Norton's voice annoying and Hayden Christensen's voice not annoying?
Because
I'm sorry, I'm on a different train from you guys, you know that. But in my school, Hayden Christensen is the guy you don't want to talk.
That emo whiny boy is very like, yes, it does it for me. I still listen to emo music. Like, I don't know. I'm literally seeing Pierce the Veil next month, and I got them tattooed on my arm, and they released a new song, and I've been talking about it forever. Like, I don't know. I'm emo forever. So
I'm so, yeah, but I think you're projecting the emo thing on it. Well, no, I won't tell you what you're doing.
Hayden Christensen is emo.
Okay.
In Star Wars.
I'm so glad it's a large country where you can have diverse opinions about things. Because I like Edward Norton's voice, and Hayden Christensen's voice makes me want to scream. I'll just say that.
Maybe because you just got attracted to emo boys. It's okay. Not everyone is.
Yeah, it's okay. D23, like a lot of things, were exciting. The announcement of Black Panther Captain America game, very exciting, but I think it's so far in the future, and Untitled will get more into that at the appropriate time. I'm really glad to hear more about the Marvels. I still think that's going to be the most exciting cosmic quantum leap of next year. Okay, the next Disney Plus series that's coming out is Andor, is it not? I mean, after She-Hulk
is done. On the 21st. Yeah. 3 episodes on the 21st.
Yeah, I'm getting pretty excited about that. And again, it's mainly because I think Tony Gilroy is a good writer for this sort of thing. And, you know, we were talking about Rogue One the other week, and, you know, watch that one again. And it still has something that I think all the other non-original trilogy movies don't.
The footage that they've released from Andor, and I think they also released that extended scene between Stellan Skarsgård and Diego Luna. I think one thing that's really interesting about Andor that separates it from the other Disney Plus shows is that it's the first one that's like almost all location and not using the volume as much as the other shows
that's
do.
That's important too.
And you can see it in the footage, yeah. Right? You can tell that they're out in the world, the tactileness of everything. So
yeah, and that's sort of one of the distinctive features of the Bourne movies. Not like the Bourne movies are the best thing ever, but they very much in the old school of like, we're going to that location, we're going to Italy, we're going to, you know, and you like, it just feels more like, you know, you're in these different worlds. Yeah. Anyway, so excited about that. And yourself, Keith?
Yeah, so the couple more things from D23 we didn't get to talk about that I'm very excited for. One is the Percy Jackson trailer they dropped.
I didn't watch that.
Yeah, are you a fan of the books?
I didn't read the books, but I liked the movies with Logan Lerman, and the second one featured Fall Out Boy's music, so it's just
so it's just in your
it's in
DNA.
My wheelhouse.
Well, a lot of the Percy Jackson book fans were not fans of the movies, so they've been waiting for a more faithful adaptation. Rick Riordan is actually involved with the series, so, and it's more of a teaser than a trailer, so it's really, really exciting. The dialogue is lifted straight from the first book, The Lightning Thief. The kid playing Percy is the kid from The Adam Project with Ryan Reynolds. That was cool. The other cool thing from D23, American-born Chinese, there was some footage released of some behind-the-scenes stuff with Michelle Yeoh. That's right. That's based on the Jean Lun Yang book. But there was some cool behind-the-scenes footage. Michelle Yeoh's in it. She plays Guan Yin. Daniel Wu from Into the Badlands is the Monkey King. So, like, really cool. The Destin Cretton from from Shang-Chi is he's not the showrunner, but he's the director, I think, of, I don't know of all the episodes, but I think the first episode at least. Anyway, the other cool thing out of D23, which is not connected, but they announced Indy 5. Like, I love the Indiana Jones movies. I'm not sure why we need a fifth one after the fourth one was such trash. But we're getting a fifth one. They showed footage. They didn't show it to the world, but they, I guess, showed footage on stage. But same day, they announced during the Marvel panel, Ke-Huy Quan is going to be in Loki Season 2. And now, famously, Ke-Huy Quan was Short Round in Temple of Doom. And so backstage, he was backstage the same time Harrison Ford was. They saw each other, gave each other a big embrace, and that photo went viral on social media. Mm. And it, ain't gonna lie, it brought a tear to my eye. But it also made me think, well, shit, instead of Indiana Jones 5, why don't we get an Indiana Jones 6 with Indy and Short Round reuniting as, like, you know, adult and, I guess, geriatric men. So that was like the bright
spot. You're asking why we don't do that?
Yeah, you're right. Well, hell, if Tom Cruise can hang off the side of an airplane, you can put Harrison Ford and Ke-Huy Quan in a movie together. But anyway, that photo was what's nerd popping for me this week. So, Brittany Monet, how can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me at Hi Brittany Monet. I'm on both Twitter and Instagram. And then we are officially turning the Naomi podcast feed into the Lituation Room, which we have lituation.com because someone else took the, but they don't even use it. But we bought the domain name of Lituation Room, and at, I think it's at litcrew_pod is the Twitter handle for the new.
But if you already follow Naomi Podcast, you automatically follow
this,
right?
Yes, if you were already following the Naomi Podcast, then you are already now following it. We just kind of tweeted. We all tweeted and announced it. So it's going to be fun. We're going to try to do like episodes once a month. And we recorded actually earlier today talking about D23 and all of that. And of course, I once again was championing Werewolf by Night because that's like my favorite thing that came out of D23 besides like Hocus Pocus and The Little Mermaid. So, yeah.
Dominic, how can people find you on the web?
Oh, I'm Dominic Ma on Instagram or Twitter. It's D-O-M-M-A-H, Dom Ma.
You can find me on Twitter at TheRealChow, _real_chow, and on Instagram at RealKeithChow. Follow The Nerds of Color at The Nerds of Color, and go to HardKnockMedia.com to find this podcast and all of the podcasts in the Hard Knock family. Give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts if you can, because that helps people find the podcast. Support us on patreon.com/thenerdsofcolor. Buy merch at TeePublic and subscribe to our videos at youtube.com/thenerdsofcolor. Thank you for listening, and until next time.
I know a girl named Madison and she likes to do heroin.
Is that something that we should
know? Is that true, or is that
it's a song by this band called Grayscale. And ever since I watched the episode of She-Hulk, I have that song stuck in my head. So I've been singing all day. And a girl named Madison, and she used to do heroin.
Not like she's a super heroine, but just
but not where
heroin.
You think.
It's a great song. It's called Painkiller Weather by Grayscale.
When we come... We'll come back to it in another like week or so, but I also think Wongers is a little fancy white. It's the word Wong. But Wongers? I'm trying to have a good sense of humor about it. So.